Welcome everyone to the 7th episode of That's So Bro.
That's So Bro. That's So Bro with Amanda and Yoshin.
Today's topic is how do we make white people laugh? And we have an expert.
How's it going, Mojo?
So, please tell us, why are you an expert of making white people laugh?
Well, you said that. I don't think I'm an expert, but do this for a living, so... It's not easy, I will tell you that much, but I guess during this episode, we will be getting to the depths of it.
So first of all, tell us, who are you?
I am Malinder, Malinder Pereira.
And our famous question, who is Malinder?
Like I said before, Sarala Minye. Well, I picked that word, like, you know, recently there was a lot of circulation of that term in the internet, so, like, you know, now I have to look into the internet to learn the Sinhalese slangs because I don't live here anymore. Just a comedian, stand-up comedian based in Europe, and I don't know what else to say about me unless you ask me.
I think the fact that, brother, as a Sri Lankan, you were able to make it so successful in Europe gives a lot of hope to aspiring comedians as well. And the fact that as a Sri Lankan, you are now representing our country up there is a huge thing. So when you say Sarala Minye Ekmashang, you know, that's playing a really low picture there. You can be a bit more proud and just get up on the table and say that too.
So he gets on stage in the middle of a bunch of white people and it's like, hey, I'm from Sri Lanka. And they'll be like, what?
What an exotic man.
Was that the joke?
Well, to be honest, some people don't even know where Sri Lanka is in most places that I perform. So I get to teach them what Sri Lanka is and what it means to be Sri Lankan.
So it's a geography lesson.
Yeah. And it's not easy when you're actually ethnically ambiguous because people can't really pinpoint
what do they get?
Where
what
the
guesses?
Fuck I am from. So, like,
right.
You know,
what are the guesses?
It starts, obviously I get the Indian part,
right,
which I fucking hate. But...
Off to a great start. That was 2 minutes.
Nah, I'm just joking, man. Like, you know, but I mean, they do guess South Asia, but then it can go to Malaysia. It can go to East Africa, like especially Ethiopia or Somali or Eritrean. And then like it can be like somewhere around Mombasa in Kenya. And then it goes up to down to Mauritius. Cause that's,
right.
Mauritius is a weird country to me, actually. Like, that's a country in Africa, an island in Africa filled with people who look like exactly like us and they speak French. So, so that's the thing, man. Like, you know, and some, like, you know, Fiji, like Pacific nations,
right,
islands and all that. So it's I get everything, man. Jamaica, like I have a whole joke about that, about being ethnically ambiguous. But so that's why, like, you know, they can't really pinpoint and say, like, where are you from? So I have to, like, give them a little bit of education. I first have to ask if we owe them money, but then after that, like...
That's where the Chinese people are like, you do! So before you moved to Europe, before wherever you are now, where are you based from?
So... Right now, I left Ireland and I came here for 2 months. When I'm going back, I'll be going back to Austria. So when I moved to Europe, it was in Austria. That's where I started doing comedy. After I became a full-time comedian, after a couple of years in Austria, I moved to Ireland because that's the only country in the EU that speaks English.
Oh,
as a
really?
Native. Yep.
I didn't know that.
Mm. There we go.
What's the common language in the EU?
Well, there is no common language. Every country has their own language. I mean, Austria and Germany speak German. Switzerland has Swiss German, and which I don't even think it's a real language. But, like, you know.
So it's not a real language.
I like how you laugh at everything. And then they speak French in like Geneva parts. They speak French. And like, you know, every place has a different language, so many different languages. So that's also an interesting thing to go and do English comedy there. So that's why I wanted to move to a place where I can actually be among people, because, like, you know, when you're doing comedy in a country that doesn't speak English as a native language, you get into a bubble, like, right. You know, and you need, like, if you want to grow, you need to travel as a comedian that I tell everybody. And also I wanted to be in a, because there's another thing. I know I'm running all over the place here. When you do comedy in places like Austria and Germany and places like that, they're very reserved. They're very reserved. They like what we call in, like what we call is like, you're not, you don't get battle ready. Like it's very hard to like, because even if somebody says something and you say something back, like you don't have active banter because like it's not their first language either. So they're holding it back. So you're like, ah. But when you go to a place like Ireland where like comedy is in everybody's bloodline, right? You need to prove you're funny because right. That's a population that people know we are funny, right? So when you go on that stage, you need to own that stage. Like I am funny.
I didn't know Ireland was famous for being funny. I thought they were famous for drinking and...
I knew this is coming, but...
St. Patrick's Day, y'all?
They would consider that racist, but like... but now it's a great place to do comedy, man. Like, you know, it's a country full of people who is always... as they say, up for the crap. Like, you know, they are always have to, like, up for having some fun. They always have a lot of banter, man. Like, my first, like I had a big fro when I got to Ireland. And my first friend in Ireland, how we became friends were, like, I was outside the pub having a smoke. And he came out and just looked at me and said, fuck you and your good hair. And I said, at least I have hair. So
that's exactly how Amanda and me became friends.
Oh, it's very good. There you go.
So parallel university.
I know, like, you know.
Considering Ireland's very dark history, I guess they need to recover from that. With
the Oh, yeah.
It's 100%. It's a whole coping mechanism, I feel.
Like dark sides, like dark history is actually make good art.
Yeah.
That's also what they say, like, you know, like even the songs and everything. So yeah, like, you know, I moved to Ireland for 3 years. I was there. It was great, but as I mentioned, I'm a full-time comedian. This is all right. I do for a living. It's getting hard. Like Ireland is like Ireland worst one of the like Ireland was the most expensive country at one point a couple of years ago.
I think Sri Lanka's catching up. Get you Ireland.
It is actually like I've been here for 2 days and I'm like, hell, I'm paying European prices here. Yeah.
We're coming after you, Ireland.
I like, you know, You can't just do things just because you like things. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices,
right.
Especially like, you know, when you have to put food on the table.
Right.
So you have to do what's best for everybody else. So I'm moving back to Austria, but as a different person, you know, in these 3 years as a comedian, I grow a lot. Like that's what happens. Like, you know, you travel, you see new things, you engage with different audiences, which is great, which is a very beneficial for me as a comic going back to the mainland in Europe. So, and for the first time, I'm looking forward to perform some comedy in Asia. I've never performed in Sri Lanka. So, lots to do in this 2 months.
I mean, that being said, if you have a show that's coming out anywhere in Sri Lanka, now would be a great time to plug that in.
Well, I don't. You guys need to tell me that.
Stay tuned for the next episode of That's So Bro. All right.
So before you, when did you go to Europe?
So 2014.
Before that, did you try comedy in Sri Lanka?
No. So yeah, see, that's the thing. I've never known as a person who was funny. I was, when we were having a chat earlier, I told, like, when I told my friends that I am doing comedy now, their first, every single friend, they asked me, do white people laugh at everything you say? Because we don't remember you being funny.
Wow, okay.
When I told my mom that I'm a comedian, first, she wasn't happy. Second,
sounds
she said,
like a typical brown
guy. Yeah, of course. Like, you know, like I wasn't expecting anything else. The next thing she asked me was like, but Malinda, how can you do comedy? You're not funny.
Thanks, mom.
I wouldn't say she's the most supportive person when it comes to comedy, but she likes my comedy at least. That's positive.
That's something. Yeah.
She watched my special. She always now talk about it, and she actually shares my clips and everything. I think that's great progress for a brown mom.
We need to take a moment and appreciate that his mom knows how to share. What a legend! My mom still calls it Tunkai by accident. And squats him.
My question is, how did you make that transition? So I know that a lot of Sri Lankans right now might be stuck where you're doing a job that you don't really want to do because your parents force you to do it. What gave you the courage to transition from, I don't know, I'm doing this because I want to do it, to I want to do this because I know in the heart of hearts I really want to do this?
Yeah. So I've always been an artist. I was a musician before I left Sri Lanka. I played for the National Orchestra before I... I've been involved in arts. Like, the stage is never a new place to me.
Right.
But then again, none of that shit makes your parents... happy, you know, yeah. Like you have to stick to
parents.
Exactly. You have to stick to the script, like, you know.
Yeah.
Lawyer, engineer,
what accountant.
Accountant.
Oh well.
Hey.
Disgrace to the family.
Hi, Mom.
So that's. now the thing is, man, like, you know, it never mattered to me. Like, I had, like. You need to understand you're your own person. Like, right. Now this is getting profound. This is not comedy. Like, you have to realize, like, yes, like, they all have dreams, but you are not responsible for their dreams. Because you are only responsible for your own dreams,
right?
And you have to make it work. Because if you try it and you work it out, and if you work it out, you will be happy. And if your happiness will make them happy. That's something that you need to understand.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, like, you know, I know people who owns businesses, man. Right. I know a brown couple who owns a coffee business. I have a joke about that. Some crowd work. Like, their parents just tell their friends that my son and my daughter-in-law owns a business. They don't put the word coffee in front.
Oh, right.
Like, you know, like, because this is a very Asian problem. Like, you know, parents want all their dreams to be achieved through you. Like, you know, so the moment you understand, like, and you're not, what do you call that? You're not in debt for that. Like, you know, right. And you see, like, I escaped that, and I still have a great relationship with my mom. Mm-hmm. And she, like, you know, it will work out. Like,
it does.
You just need to take the first step and prove, like, and make it work for you. Because your question should be, am I going to do something that I am not happy of doing because I make other people happy by doing it, or do you really want to, like, live like that for the rest of your life, or just do something or anything that makes you happy,
right?
And through that happiness, make others happy, right? So, I mean, I would say that's the way I did it. Like, I'm like, one, like, because I was already doing something I like. I was actually a researcher. I was a researcher at the university, right? And I liked that job,
right?
Like, it was nice, right? And then I got into comedy, and I was like, fuck it, I like this more.
How did you get into the money? Like, what happened?
So. Yeah, I started comedy in Austria because, as I said, I was a musician before I left.
You went to Europe as a musician?
No, I wish.
So
I went to Europe to do my master's. So I did my bachelor's in Malaysia in software engineering, typical. And then I went to Austria to do my master's. And while I'm doing my master's, that's when I... got into comedy, because in Austria, as I mentioned, everything is in German, so there is nothing literally going on. And I saw this ad once, a stand-up comedy open mic night happening, right? And then I went to the open mic night and was watching the show. That was my first, like, I loved comedy, I loved stand-up. During my bachelor's, all what I used to do is, like, I had a housemate. He was doing art. He was art major, and I was so we never had classes together, but we were, like, great friends. We actually had a business together as well in Malaysia in event management. So what we do is we will meet in the cafeteria after the after courses, and then on the way I buy a bottle, he buys a bottle, so we had two bottles to finish every fucking day.
The story starts with that bottle.
That's how it started.
Every good story starts with a bottle, bro.
So that's like the landlady was at one point, the landlady was concerned because she came to clean the house. Imagine a room this big and the whole room was filled with bottles, like rows of bottles. And she called me once like, "Malinda, I'm worried about you." I was like, "Why are you worried about me?" I was like, "I just made 300 ringgits by giving away your that's a lot of bottles." She didn't tell me how many bottles she cleaned. Like, she told me exactly how much money she made from my bottles.
Well, so, damn.
I'm like, "Can I have half?" those are stories that you, like, those are things that you don't even, like, forget, like, you know?
Right.
Anyhow, so what we did was, we would be drinking every night, watching these stand-up clips, like, you know, likes of Cat Williams, Dave Chappelle, Kevin Hart. So that's how I was like, and I, every time I do, like, a big show, I message my friend, "Dude, we never fucking thought I'll be doing this for a fucking living," you know? So even today, like, I'm like, this is surreal. So that love for comedy was there. And then I saw this, and I've never been to a live comedy show.
Right.
Right. I went to this open mic. I sat down there. At the end of the show, I was like, "I'm funnier than 8 of these guys." And then I straight went to the promoter.
You started with Saralam in no?
There you go.
That's so bro.
That's so bro. That's my guy.
And I know I will say this at the end of the show also, but I'm so glad you came and joined us in this, man.
Because, I'm happy, man.
I know a lot of Sri Lankan guys who, and they're friends of mine. We all went to school together and they are still doing the jobs they were told to do by their parents, and they didn't have the courage to go after what they want to do. And now I see them trying to cope through other means, because they're not living the life they actually want to live. So
I was a rebel since the day I was born, man. Like I can tell you stories. I never did what my parents wanted.
I can imagine. Come on, Malinda, walk. No.
So every, like, I was a cadet. I was in the cadet band.
Okay.
Right? My parents wanted me out from the band second year, right? Third year, they didn't even know I was in the band. I went to the camp and I called from Rantabe and said, like, "I'm not coming home for 10 days. I'm here." And
that's some hardcore shit, bro. God damn. All right.
I ended up, like, I was a sergeant and I actually became a WO2 as, like, so I went to the highest rank I could at right. the end of my cadeting career. So I, like, that's the thing, like, the only person who would give up shit for me will always be me, not anybody else.
That should be on a t-shirt.
Well said. Yeah, absolutely, man. Well said.
For merchandising ideas.
I mean, don't try this at home. You probably don't have my parents as your parents, so try it with caution.
My mom would probably come to the camp, beat everyone up.
Everyone at the camp?
Everyone at the camp.
What about you?
Well, I'd be murdered.
My mom tried it. She came to the principal directly, and I was like, "Mom, it's not going to happen." And the principal was like, "If he says it's not going to happen,
what do you want me to do?" My next question was going to be your funniest memory from childhood.
Well,
I feel like this is one of them.
They are definitely one of them. I mean, I like my mom. The thing is, like, you see a lot of things that I did, man. My mom knew it. It's just that she disciplined us in a very, I mean, like, you see, like, even that rebel mindset, like, didn't get us in trouble, you know. Like, we never did anything bad or wrong. I mean, we had fun as boys, like, you know. We used to have, like, because we had a great excuse, like, as a cadet, our training starts at 5 in the morning.
Right.
So we had an excuse to leave home at a very early time.
Right.
Nobody would suspect.
I see where this is going.
Exactly. So we used to meet on a random day at 5, like, to take the 5:20 train that goes to Bandaravela.
Right.
Badulla, sorry. Like, Podimanike, right?
Yeah.
We take the Podimanike train and just get off anywhere we feel like and just find, like, a place where we can go for a swim. And at one point, I didn't know we took a swim. 100 meters away from a waterfall, like St. Clair's. Yeah, St. Clair's. So we didn't know. We still didn't know, right? We got 3 bottles of, like, Lion Stout, and we put fucking freezing cold water, man. And then, so we had our, like, 3 of my friends, right? We had a great time. And as we coming out, like, there was a man yelling, like, "Yo, where the fuck are you coming from?" And I was like, "We were just having a swim there." Like, "Do you know the fucking waterfall is right down there?"
Damn.
I was like, "Holy shit, this could have been our last swim." Like, so there are so many that kind of stories, man. Like, and we never had the problem because our training starts at 5, ends at 11. So
you have the entire day.
We had the entire day to do whatever the hell we want, no, without any suspicion. So that's just like, you know, like those were never like malicious. Like, those are just boys being boys, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you had fallen from the waterfall.
Well, at least I won't be there to find out what happens. But
it's a win-win situation. Either I'm there to have a good time, I'm not there to have a good time. It is what it is. What about you, Amanda? What is your funniest memory from childhood?
Brother, compared to this, I have nothing. I'll tell you what, right? My funniest thing was, because as a child, I was very shy. One of my biggest achievements was actually going and talking to girls. One time, bro, like, remember that thing in Fast and Furious, I think, where Paul Walker, he races while staring at the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So I tried that while walking, right? I walked into a tree. That is my funny story. That's all I have, man. So
that's funny.
Thanks.
That's
funny. Thanks, guy. Thanks, St. Clair's, man. I'll take it home. What about you, bro?
That's good.
I used to prank my parents all the time.
Well, okay. That's this extreme. That's this extreme.
The biggest prank I played was the credit card prank. I don't know if you remember it.
Which is?
So there was a radio
station. You put your parents' financial debt was your prank.
So there was a radio station, and it's still there. They wanted to do, like, they were having this segment where you give them an idea for a prank and they'll do it for you.
Right.
So I called them up and I'm like, "We pretend like you're from this bank." And I had just got this, you know, the kids get this card, supplement card.
Right, right, right.
I just gotten it. So they were like, "Okay, just call my dad, pretend you're from the bank, and say that he has overcharged, that they have sent red notice, no one has paid, and we are going to arrest him. Say that I have bought lingerie and, you know, stuff like that." So now this dude calls my dad. Now it's on live radio. Everyone can hear.
Right.
They're like, "Sir, we are from this bank, blah, 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 blah. Your son, blah, 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 blah. These are the charges, Midnight Divas, whatever was there, you know, chocolate, a hotel stay." My dad's like, "Hey, shish. Now it's on loudspeaker, so I can hear my mom breathing, like, and then my mom starts screaming, I can feel my dad, like, he's about to get a heart attack. Like, he's like, he doesn't care about what I have bought. He's worried about me going to jail.
Right.
He's freaking out about that. He's like, "Please don't send to jail. Please don't send to jail." We're out of Colombo. He's in the bedroom, right? He's in the bedroom. I can hear his voice. He's like, "We're out of Colombo right now. As I get into Colombo, I make all the payments. Please don't send the cops." He's like, "No, sir, nothing can be done. The cops are on the way now," and all that. And my mom is screaming. I can hear her. She's like approaching to beat me. And I was like, "Mom, it's a prank. It's a prank. It's a prank. It's a prank. It's a prank." And I called the radio station. I'm like, "Dude, you guys have to call them back and tell them it's a prank, you know?" And then they called them back and they're like, "This is a prank. Calm down, chill," and all that. And my dad's like, and he says, like, a couple of singular filth live on air. And yeah, that didn't go well also. He's like, HP, something in those lines, if you know what I'm talking about.
Well,
so the only thing I wanted to ask is, like, how old were you when Midnight Divas came out?
It wasn't Midnight Divas, I think it was some other lingerie shop. I can't remember what it was. Amante, was it?
So technically, you all both almost gave your parents heart attacks.
Oh, daily basis. But I didn't go to waterfall.
Right.
I'm scared of death.
Probably she might find this out from this episode.
Oh, she didn't know until now?
The whole thing.
Oh, hey, auntie, how's it going? Thanks so much for watching.
I mean, she, most of my stories comes out on podcasts. She's like, now I know. But you see, sometimes she does have an idea what I'm doing. I used to smoke a lot, right?
Right.
I used to smoke a lot. She never said anything. I mean, the day I got caught drinking, she beat the hell out of me while I was puking, right? I had to tell her, like, "Mom, can you please let me finish this and then you can beat me?" but she knew about the smoking, but she never managed to get, like, catch me, right?
Right.
Like, I was never caught in action, and she never found any cigarettes around me. But when I was about to leave Sri Lanka in 2011, I was like, Mom, it's going to be expensive. Like, dental care is going to be expensive outside Sri Lanka.
Right.
Can you give me money so I can go get my teeth cleaned?
Right.
She said, like, well, if you didn't smoke, you don't have to. If you didn't smoke, you wouldn't have to clean your teeth.
Right.
And then I told, like, at that time, I gave up smoking for a short period as well. Let's say 6 months now.
Okay, okay.
I'm not smoking. And then I told my mom, Mom, I don't smoke. Well, not anymore, right? I'm like, how the hell do you know this?
Mom's
that's a mom thing, dude.
Mom's no.
like, no. I never told you I smoked. You never caught me.
Right.
You probably might have smelled it.
Right, right.
Still. And I never fucking told you I stopped. But you figured it all out. So, great. You can't fucking hide things, man. They know anyway. Like, it depends on, like, they pick their battles as well. Like, you know. Like, if it is something unharmful, like, you know, as long as you're not committing crime.
Right.
Some parents are like, it's foolish to think that
they don't know.
Because
they did the same things, man. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, you know, there's, you know.
Sorry?
I mean, listen.
Oh, for sure, Sean. For absolute sure.
I've not done anything that they're talking about.
Okay, moving on. When it comes to comedy, dude.
Mm.
All right. And this was something I really wanted to know. When you perform on stage, do you think that as a comedian, you have a responsibility to address social and political situations that are happening in and around the world? Or do you keep those as different segments?
Okay. Do I believe whether you have a responsibility? No.
Right.
You're a comedian. Your job is to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah. Amen.
That's your first thing.
Yashan, like, don't take this personally, all right? Ask his point of view. I'll come to you after that.
No, the thing is, you can, like, I mean, you know, there is political comedy. There are several genres of comedy that you can tap into. Like, if that's your thing,
do it.
By all means.
Right.
Right. But what I a political comedian doing political and stuff like that, right? I do get it. That's his genre, and he has all the right to do it.
Right.
But then there are comedians who don't do that as genre, but use it as like a quick, what do you call that?
Not a clickbait, but you know
what I'm trying to say. Like,
right.
Like, okay, this is the hot topic now.
Right.
Let's just do a fucking hacky joke here.
Right.
So people, like, I can record it and put it online and then I can get some views. Like, you know, and I have been guilty of it as well.
Right.
Like, I mean, we all are. Like,
shut up, Michelle.
No, the thing is, like, you know, you only learn from it. Like, you know, because a good joke takes time to develop.
Right.
Right. And when you pick, like, a certain thing, like, and especially if it is not something you've been doing, you're doing this just for a quick like and a share and a follow, you don't have the time to cook that joke really good.
Right.
Right. Like some of the jokes that we do, we have done it 100 times to get it perfect to go on stage. Like,
right.
So if it is something on your, like, you know, on your alley, on your lane, then you might be able to pull it off. Like me doing a political joke is like, I'm not a political comedian.
Right.
So if I do a political joke without having to even properly structure it, it's going to be a horrible, fucked up joke. Like, it's not going to even be funny most of the time. Like, you know, it's very hard to get it because it's not my thing.
Right.
So again, like, you know, I personally don't do, like, current affairs unless it's, like, close to me.
Okay.
So, for example, in Ireland last November, there was a riot, right? Mm. Like, the whole riot was about immigration, against immigration. So as an immigrant...
Against it.
Exactly. So I did...
I go home.
Right, exactly. You know, they asked me, they told Ireland is full. So I was like, fuck it, I'll leave. Because man's got options.
Goddamn, all right. Well, that's a flex.
Not so I did a joke about the riot because it's close to me. Like, I'm an immigrant. Like, you're tell, like, so I can do about that because it's in my lane, right?
Right.
And even so, like, you know, the one I recorded and put it on YouTube is like after, like, I did that whole week. That joke was done that whole week, and finally I managed to get a decent enough clip that was okay to put online. I wouldn't call that one of my best works. You know, so it's very hard, like, because, you know, like, if I manage to do that joke up until like now, maybe I'll have a, like, a properly cooked, ready to serve meal. But I don't have that. And I know I could have said yes or no to that question, but like, I don't, like, personally, I don't think as a comedian you're responsible to talk about social issues. But however, you can, if you choose to. There's no right or wrong answer there.
Right.
It's only opinions.
Yeah, but then it's not your responsibility to be doing things in not, or what you don't want to do. It is on other people to watch what it is. And
so, like, the thing is, you know, if it is a cause that's close to your heart,
then go.
Right? Like, then, like, you can use your platform, right?
Right.
Now the biggest thing for me is, I can understand a comedian with 100,000 followers doing it because that person has a platform.
Okay.
I have 3,500 followers, man. I don't have a fucking platform, right? Like, who am I talking to? My friends and the 800 people?
His mom.
So I have to be realistic. Like, you know, like, yes, I do perform in front of 200, 300, sometimes 6 people. But, like, you know, I mean, that's the reality of a life of a comedian. Like, you know, so I do I really have a platform is my first question.
Right.
Right. Like, and then the next thing is, like, if you do have a platform and if there's a cause, like, you know, like, so for example, me as an immigrant in a country in Europe, like, and if there is anti-immigration stuff going on, it's a cause that is close to me, so I can use that if I had a platform, but I don't.
Right.
Like, you know, but also, like, you shouldn't try to, because it's a very thin line, you know.
Right.
You can use that to milk it out and you know, use that as a whole thing, or actually speak facts and stuff like that. Like, you know, I think it's completely personal.
Yeah.
It's always up to the person who's doing it. Like, I don't think, like nobody has the right to say whether that person should or should not
do something.
Like, basically, like, I know, like, some fans say, like, he's a comedian, he can use his platform to do this and do that. No, like,
right.
I want to tell jokes.
Yeah. And that's a respectable stance, but yeah. Not bending over to peer pressure and everything and doing what you want to do.
I think the best example is what I was telling you recently. Like, as I said, the comedian is specialized in something.
Right.
If you're not in politics and you don't have to speak about it because you don't know about it, right?
Right.
Like, for example, if you break your leg, you can't go to the dentist and be like, fix it. You're a doctor, fix it.
You're a doctor too.
You're a doctor. You can't go to, you know, like, you have a heart problem, go to the eye doctor and be like, fix my heart, you know?
Right.
So that's the same thing, you know. If you're a political comedian, then yeah. But if you're normal, don't want to dabble in politics, you can.
Yeah.
So it's up to you.
Yeah. Plus, I think it's very respectable because, like you said, dude, it's an easy fix, right? The second you jump into like a trendy topic, then you become relevant. And as anybody who's aspiring to grow, and we all are, you do want to stay as relevant as you can because there's so much competition out there. So it's respectable that you choose the higher ground and you don't do what everybody else expects you to do or the easy way out and you do your own thing. Yeah, absolutely.
This is the most competitive art form in the world, man. Comedy is the most competitive art form. There's no art form because everything else is based on, like there's no art form that is competitive as, because number one, this is the only art form that you don't need a single cent to start.
Right.
You don't need any money to start, like, to become a comedian.
Right.
You just need an audience. And it's not your job to find an audience. The promoter, the booker will find you an audience.
Right.
You just have to go on stage. You don't have to, like, you don't have to even, like, buy a notebook. You can write it on your phone. You already own a phone. So that's why, like, it's open to everybody, like, you know, and then, like, to be on the game, you have to, like, we usually say, comedy has a way of humbling people because it happens to all of us. Like I perform pretty much every day, right? And And by the sixth day, your ego is over the fucking moon. You're like, yeah, man, I've been fucking killing this day. Just like 6 days in a row, I've been like fucking, you know, like this many applause breaks. And like, you know, three jokes, five applause breaks. Like fucking hell, man. And on the seventh day, you bomb like a motherfucker. Like, ah.